From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Anybody got an urgent garden question? Apparently so, and because you keep asking them in comments on the website and emails and even on Facebook and now on Instagram, at Away to Garden on Instagram, Ken Drews keeps coming back to help me answer them. Today's topics range from transplanting hydrangeas to growing hellebores, but first this message.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
So, Ken Drews, welcome back. You ready for some Q&A?
Oh, hi, Margaret.
Oh, yes, hi, Ken.
Of course. I live for this.
You live for this. Oh, poor thing. Oh, baby. So we've got quite the list, but everything's okay over there in New Jersey?
You know, it was cold and spring was late and it wasn't going to happen. And I was afraid it was going to happen all at once. And all it's done is caught up. Now we're on schedule.
Right, right. We had 3 days of like 80 something or close to 90 or whatever. And mm-hmm. that sort of brought it right to more, a little more normal-ish, sort of. Ish.
Ish.
Yeah. So I have a question from Bonita who came in the comments on awaytogarden.com. She has a hydrangea paniculata grandiflora, so a PG hydrangea, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
She's had it for 9 years, and so it's now like 6.5, 7 feet tall. And what she wants to know, do we think it's possible to move this tree? It's a tree form. It's been trained, you know, to a standard. Mm-hmm. And she, it's just not exactly in the right spot, getting a little too big. And it's shading out other things that are beneath it and around it. And so she's wanting to move it. And she wants to know, can she move a paniculata hydrangea? Have you ever moved one?
Hydrangea paniculatas have wheels.
Oh, they do? I didn't know that.
Yes.
What's the Latin word, the technical word for wheels?
It's hydrangea transporta.
Transporta. Okay, good. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Never heard of that.
Transplanta transporta. And I've moved them many times. I've never moved a standard.
Uh-huh.
And I imagine she's got a pretty nice sized trunk at this point.
Yeah.
But they're very forgiving.
Mm-hmm.
I would try to move it before it's leafed out. So she might be a little late.
Right.
And she could trim it a little bit if it's got leaves, but try to get as much of the soil as possible. But they have kind of shallow roots and they move very, very easily. They move very well. And I've moved them with leaves too. I shouldn't say that because I just said don't do that. But I have done that.
You have done that.
And then they kind of limp along and they have a little wilt and it takes them a year to get established. But if you move them in the late winter, early spring, it's just
That's easiest of all.
But I would be afraid with that trunk to make sure that it's big enough and sturdy enough and maybe has a stake. She could stake it in advance.
So it's not unstable when it gets to its new home and top
right.
heavy. Yeah.
She needs help.
Needs help. I need help, but that's
help.
A whole nother matter.
I'll say.
A nursery near me, a friend of mine was relocating and or actually he was putting on an addition and he had a whole bunch of paniculata hydrangeas and didn't want to lose them, but they weren't going to, you know, they were right where the addition was going to be. And so a local nursery came and did exactly what you said, but they were not standard. So they cut them way back. And, you know, it was like, I think it was actually the early fall and cut them way back. And boy, the next year they just grew up like crazy in their new home. He moved them to another spot. And they did great. So, yeah, I agree.
They bloom on new wood. So you can do that if you do it.
Exactly.
Even in the fall, then you'll have flowers the next year. I cut one back, I don't remember exactly when, to about 12 to 18 inches. And in a year, it was as big as it was before.
It's crazy, right? It's crazy. So we have another question about a different subject, a herbaceous plant, from Judy, also in the comments on awaytogarden.com, is asking about Helleborus foetidus, the stinking hellebore. And she said it was doing so well in her garden in the end of March and early April, and now it's droopy and looks like it won't make it. Her hellebore hybrids, you know, her oriental hybrids or Helleborus ex hybridus, are doing really fantastic. But she's wondering, why is this thing, you know, kind of a mess? And have you grown this one, foetidus?
You know, that's exactly what happened to me. Exactly.
Yes.
Half of them are black and dead, and half of them, well, okay, and a third of them are looking wonderful. And then a little few of them have tons of flowers, but the foliage is black. And I've found that they're kind of mysterious in that way, but they don't completely disappear. You know, I have like two plants, and the next year I have four plants, but they're not the same plants, I think.
Right. And that's exactly right. You know, Judith Knott Tyler, the late Judith Knott Tyler, who wrote a great book about hellebores and hellebore nursery and so forth, she said to me years ago, she said, think of it like you think of another short-lived perennial like columbine, right? It's a true perennial, but ... It's not going to stay where you put it, right? So, like, mama plant's going to die off, and a foot away or 10 feet away, depending, you're going to have the babies. And so you're always going to have it in sort of the general vicinity, but it's not the exact plant. And when mama plant is in decline, it's going to look like hell like this. So the key is to sort of facilitate that colonization, like don't clean up the area too fastidiously and kill off the babies, because you need to rely on them to have a continuous, you know, population, right? As a very shallow root system, she said, it doesn't like to have too much water, so that's another thing that can make it look even worse in its decline than otherwise. So even planting under evergreens is good. And yeah, so most of the other hellebores, except for Sternii, is another species that acts like that. So these are not ones to like try to cut back like we cut back our oriental hybrid foliage, you know, to show the you don't do that with the fetidus. That'll mess it up even worse. So this is just one, like, again, like columbine, she said. You know, it's going to come and go at its own whim, and you're going to have some messy moments like that. So whatever.
Whatever.
Whatever. So this was an interesting one. Elaine asked on the blog, she says she has two tiger eyes sumacs. So that's a cut leaf staghorn sumac that has gold leaves. And she has them in really large pots, but she never envisioned they'd get quite so big as the ones she saw on Margaret's website. And she's like, she's been really happy with them in pots for 2 years, but is it going to catch up with her? And she wants to know, can this grow in a container, or should she move them before it's too late? Have you grown this plant?
I've killed this plant.
Oh, good
I've
for you. Good, plant, good, good.
I think maybe three times.
Oh,
and, you know, three strikes and it's out. And it's interesting that you say containers. I didn't think of that.
Yes.
It's hardy enough to grow in a container, huh?
You know who actually grows it? I believe it's Adam Wheeler of Broken Arrow Nursery, whom we adore, and who comes and does the plant sales at my house during my open days. I believe it's Adam, not his former colleague Andy Brand, but I think it was Adam who has it in a pot in his garden. As I have big colonies of it, I have a couple of good-sized colonies where I've let it sucker as it's wont to do. You know, it's kind of a suckering, woody, irregular-shaped thing, and he. When we've done workshops together in my garden, he will bring up that, by the way, if you don't have room like this, like Margaret has this big space for it, you can grow it in a pot, and it's fun. I don't know how many years before you have to sort of tip it out and root prune it or divide it or something and put it back in the pot or several pots.
Well, also, Broken Arrow is kind of close to the coast in Connecticut.
So a little warmer.
Warmer and also kind of modulated.
So I
don't know whether it would be quite the same. But if I go for four times, I'm going to try it in a container, because I think what happened is I don't have enough sun for it.
Uh-huh.
You probably have yours in a lot of sun.
I do have it in the sun, and it seems happy there. I have one in sort of half-day shade, and it grows differently. It doesn't sucker as much. It's more of a tree-like thing. You know, it's reaching up for the light. It's not going sideways as much. I don't know if that's coincidence or what.
But so. No suicide.
No suicide. I've never lost one. I've killed many other plants. Don't worry, Ken.
Of course.
So we're going to say to Elaine, yeah, go for it. And she says 2 years she's had it, so it must have survived the winter wherever she is. So that's good. And she may have to tip it out like we do things that we're confining to a pot and either divide or root prune or whatever.
Well, if you end up having too many,
Yeah.
I'll go for a fourth time.
Okay, so we'll tell Elaine your address. Okay, no problem.
I was going to get one of yours.
Someone was, actually someone on Instagram, I posted on Instagram, you know, slash a way to garden. I posted a picture of Redgersia foliage, bold shade ground cover, but tall. It's not hugging the ground. The other day, and someone whose name on Instagram is Gardening on Rye, Gardening on Rye, on Instagram asked, what type of soil? What's the site like where your Redgersia are planted? Wet, dry, etc. This person bought some plants and put them in the shade in their garden, but it's dry shade, they say, and the plant tag didn't say anything about a moist site, but she or he has read since that moist site is preferred. Have you grown this one? No, this is another one, another plant that I love.
Well, you know, I've been to your garden, of course, and I didn't see
you?
That.
When
you
I
posted,
didn't remember your being here.
Yeah, uh-huh. Are uh-huh. you talking about Astelboides or are you talking about Redgersia?
Redgersia. The Redgersia, I have Podophylla specifically. Mm-hmm.
I have several Redgersia and I grow them in quite a moist spot, I have to say. And I know they'd like more sun than they're getting in moisture, but they are not for dry shade. No way.
Hmm. Well, because
they
I'm
want
a contrarian.
Moisture retentive.
Well, you know, and so... People are, and this was another thing that I think the first time they came, it wasn't from Broken Arrow, but someone from, I don't know, at some Hortus camp, a garden club in the city called Hortus, or someone, a group of expert plants people came.
Uh-oh.
And they saw that I have it growing under a probably 75-year-old massive triple trunk conifer that's, you know, predates me by, I mean, many years. And so in this very strange spot between paving and where this conifer is, and you would think bone dry because of the roots of this, is again, it's at least 75 years old, this conifer. And they were like, how did you get that to grow there? That's supposed to be for moist, you know? And I think even though technically there's a lot of root competition in this particular spot, you know, the Redgersia is, it has like a knobby kind of a rhizome-y. It doesn't have like a big fibrous root system. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And my soil, because I top dress with really, really good composted mulch every year, a fine textured composted stable bedding, you know, that's like a wood product that was used for cows or horses and then composted. I think that my soil is highly organic, high in organic matter, even if it's in a technically, quote, dry spot like under a conifer. I still think it has enough, because this thing is, I've taken 500 divisions and it's grown for 25 years in this spot and it's just like a thicket. It's, you know, it's real happy. So I think it's, if not moist, I think it has to be moisture retentive soil, yeah, like good organic, high organic. Does that make sense?
Yes. Now, this isn't at the base of your hill or anything.
It's right by the kitchen door, by that triple trunk white. It's a cedar of some kind, a white cedar, I think, next to the little cabin. So it's a very strange little spot, and it is.
Yeah, but you've got that big hill. I think that there's water.
Water comes down underground. You're right. Yep. I think that's right. And I'm very good to my soil and top dress, always adding more organic matter. So it's not a dry soil, even if it's a spot that would otherwise be dry in normal conditions.
Yep.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah. So, okay. So that's what we think about Redgersia. Yeah, there were a couple of sort of related questions, kind of having to do with like mulch and fallen leaves and stuff. So the first one, Ken, was from Catherine, and who wrote this on the blog. She says she just put down a couple of inches, and this is maybe a week or two ago, beginning of May, a couple of inches of mulch and, you know, bulk stuff that she got. And she wanted to plant some flower seeds in the same spot. Should she pull back the mulch or put the seeds on top, or what's the mechanism? The particular seeds that she's talking about, the packet says a quarter of an inch deep, you know? So what do you do? Do you like tease stuff back?
Yikes. There's so many questions I want to ask her, and she's not here.
She's not here.
What's the mulch? Is it wood? I don't know. She says
it's medium. It's not like bark chips. No, it's
a kind of organic.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd pull it back anyway.
Yeah,
and I'd completely pull it back. And if the plants take, you know, if the seeds come up and then you have seedlings of good size, you could move the mulch back a little bit. But I never let mulch touch any plant, you know, touch the stem of a herbaceous plant or the trunk of a tree.
Right.
Even if it's just an inch away, all the way around the stem. Because so many things can happen. But I would think that the seeds would have a lot of trouble getting through that mulch.
Yeah. I don't think you want to put them under the mulch. I think you want to tease it. You know what this reminds me of? You know Ruth? Remember Ruth Stout, the no-work garden?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Ruth Stout, she was this very eccentric, bold woman in Connecticut in, I don't remember when, but I want to say 60s maybe or something, 70.
Or before, yeah.
Yeah. And
well, she lived a long time.
She did. And she wrote these wonderful books that are classics, and like The No Work Garden, and I forget what the others are called. But she would use all her debris, leaves, old corn stalks, whatever the heck. She'd lay it down. She'd sort of sheet compost or a lasagna garden, right? That was her big aha after years of like cleaning up and then bringing back mulch onto the same bed and then cleaning up in the spring and fall and clean, you know. And she's like, hey, let stuff lie or put it, you know, nearby and use it as mulch, all your falling debris. So she would each year go out into the vegetable garden and just tease back a furrow-shaped space and plant her squash seeds or whatever. And it reminded me of that. So that was kind of my inspiration, is that, yes, you need to make room. And then once the plants are up, as you said, you could maybe move the mulch back a little closer, but not right against. Yeah. So related, Karen asked about her garden beds were mulched with shredded leaves in the fall. Mm. And she was wondering, should she be taking them out before she top dresses with compost or does any other sort of soil amendments in the spring? Like, she was wondering that when she was doing spring cleanup. Should she, like, put the compost on top of them and just leave them there? Like, what's the sort of protocol? You know, do you have a standard always what you do, or does it depend on what's growing in the bed, or how do you figure it out?
Well, it kind of depends on the condition of the shredded leaves.
Yeah.
In a way, because if it's shredded maple leaves and it's all slimy and gross, I'd sort of take it away and mix it with some stuff and put it back mixed up.
Yeah.
As opposed to putting the compost right on it, which would be kind of anaerobic, and then you'd have this layer of slime. But if it's oak leaves, or if the leaves have degraded, broken down over the winter, and are almost like compost, you could add the compost. I like the idea of kind of mixing them together. What do you think about that?
Yeah, no, I think, and for me, it depends also what's underneath. Like, if it's some tiny little, if this is super early spring and it's like, I know that my little winter aconites are in that area and they're going to try with their little tiny heads to poke up, you know, through that. If it's too thick or, like you say, slimy and wet looking and a mess, I'm going to tease it off there because I know what's underneath. So sometimes that's what guides me, is what I think is coming up under there. And there's one other thing, which is that, like, the Habitat Network, folks at Cornell and the Nature Conservancy, and a lot of other people like Doug Tallamy and other people who advise us about habitat-style gardening and being smarter and more caring about beneficial insects and so forth. Underneath stuff like leaves is where a lot of the overwintering creatures are. That's their habitat in the winter. You know, they're under there, whether it's larval forms of certain moths, butterflies, etc., or spiders or beetles, or they're under there. So if we, like, just rake off everything, we deplete the potential future generation of, you know what I mean, of beneficials. So I try to not do it everywhere, like not be too obsessive. Does that make sense?
Right, but what about in the vegetable garden?
Well, there I tease it back, and I wouldn't leave slimy stuff anywhere. You're absolutely right about that. But all I'm saying is, if there's an area where there's no plant being hurt by it being there and it's not all nasty and too thick and slimy, I'm going to maybe leave it because I think someone's sleeping down there, you know?
Well, and why would you add compost to that area unless you felt for some reason it really needed it?
Right. True. All right, so we solved that one. So there was Suzanne had a question, and this is one that I have only had minor, thank goodness, invasions. Horsetail rush, the horsetail. Mm-hmm. She says, why can't she eradicate horsetail? She's added manicure scissors to her garden tool collection and has tried cutting this thug as it emerges. Help! What to do about horsetail? And this is a fierce opponent, so she. Suzanne shouldn't feel bad. Have you had it in your garden, Ken?
I have it, yes.
There's no
such thing as had it. Because if you have it, you have it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a sort of a clump that I haven't completely eradicated because for some reason it sort of stays in a clump. But every now and again, a piece pops up.
Boing.
Or three pieces pop up, 6, 8, 10 feet away.
Yeah.
But here, and I'm not sure whether it's because my soil is sandy, if I go down to the bottom with my hand and just sort of tease it out of the ground, or you could use a tool too, it comes out pretty easily. So mm-hmm. I don't snip it off or cut it at all. I weed it out.
Hmm.
And then it kind of comes back to that clump. And I suppose I could try to kill that clump, but I just pull it out, edit, like we say.
Mm-hmm.
And it completely works. I do it around now. Just pull it out.
But
I know that doesn't work for everybody.
No, but I read one study where, first of all, I've read in research a number of times at different university projects and whatever, tilling can actually make the problem worse, because it spreads the rhizomes around. So this is one where a little piece over there is going to make a new colony, So tilling is actually worse. Chopping it up is actually worse. Taking it out whole is good, and that hoeing, so taking it out, like what you're saying, but using, if you have a larger infestation and using a tool like a hoe and in order to dislodge and then, as you say, remove big pieces, tease them out. It took up to 16 repeat sessions of that to get removal. You know what I mean? That's how consistent you had to be, right? It wasn't like once or twice or three times. And a lot of places do say that if you keep beheading it, and this is true of a lot of tenacious weed pests, prevent it from feeding itself by growing above ground. If you behead and behead and behead and behead and behead, you will weaken it.
So, is that what this woman's doing, do you think?
That's what I was wondering.
Suzanne?
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. Yeah. But it's not, again, it's not like once or twice. It's like 273,000 times, I think. No.
Well, when I tease it out, I can be a little more clear. Let's say there's like three little ones coming up. So I'll go sort of dig around below them. And when I tease it out, I'm teasing out the rhizome.
Right.
Too.
Right. And
so
I think
all the way back
to where it
starts.
Yeah. Well, Ken, I know you're not going to believe it, but we've almost used up all our time once again. What's your project this week that you're working on in there in the garden? Anything? Oh, you're lounging. You're watching TV. Okay.
Oh my gosh, there's so much to do.
I know. I'm freaking out.
I'm still pulling stuff out of the basement. Although,
me too. Right. All the pots.
We've had frost on Memorial Day here, but every year you pull stuff out, and then I have to take the stuff out of the sunroom.
Yep.
And I've already had to water some things in pots.
Me too.
So I'm going to get the rest of the stuff out of the basement, and it's cleanup. I've been weeding and cleaning up.
Yep.
And I'll be doing that the rest of my life.
All right. We'll check in with you in a few weeks when you're doing that still. Thank you so much for making time again for the Urgent Garden Questions, Ken.
Oh, thank you, Margaret.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version on Stitcher or iTunes. Find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or facebook.com/awaytogarden or instagram.com/awaytogarden. Happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.